Righto, folks. Ferocious Animals by Luke Johnson. My dad woke me early to go downtown to buy strings. It was 1989, and our team was in the grand final for the second year running. I was 8. The year before, we'd been in the grand final against the Bulldogs and been beaten 24-12. It was a hard loss for a 7-year-old. This year, we're in the grand final against the Raiders. And I didn't think we could lose, since in our house, the Raiders were made fun of for looking like Milo tins. This was my mum's contribution to the footy, deciding what pantry items the team's jerseys most look like. Yeah, we were a traditional household in this way. My dad and I started decorating as soon as I got home. I held the pre-torn pieces of sticky tape on the ends of my splayed fingers while he ran crepe paper around the veranda post and swigged from his beer bottle. There were 4 posts on the front of our house, and we moved from the left to the right, turning them into black and orange barber's poles as we went. People beeped their car horns as they drove past, and somehow it was possible for my dad to tell whether they were supportive or non-supportive beeps. Now, for the supportive ones, he raised his bottle and swigged as if he were toasting the victory to come. Otherwise, he took the longer swig, wiped his lips with his forearm or the back of his hand, and said something like, "We'll just see how many big shot horn blowers there are left at full time." After we finished up the last post, my mum came out the front door. She was pregnant with my sister at the time and was wearing a pale blue T-shirt, pyjamas, pants and slippers. "Are the men ready for their breakfast yet?" She had a spatter marks on the front of her shirt from bacon fat, and her forearms were marked with little red splotches. "You bet your life they are," my dad told her. "Aren't we, Tiger? Breakfast of champions!" And he gave my hair a little ruffle. "Isn't that right, Tiger?" I nodded and I felt his hand slide down the back of my head, past the spot where I had the number 13 shaved in there the day before. It was the number of my favourite player. My dad had taken me to the barber's especially against my mum's wishes and got the barber to shave the number 8 into his own head. "Well, come on then," my mum said. It was a warm morning, late in September. The plum trees along the footpath were just beginning to blossom and the tin on the roof made a ticking sound as it was heated by the sun. We'd just begun moving towards the front door when a yellow Falcon sedan slowed on the street directly out in front. Now, the driver pressed on his horn. 5 short blasts and a 6th flattening a long, dead note that must have lasted a good 4 or 5 seconds. All 3 of us turned around. "Great," says my mum. "Now we've got to put up all the idiots on this day, do we?" Dad stuck his middle finger up at the driver of the car. "Garney, hell, rack off back to Canberra, you parasite!" "Graham," my mum said. The driver let out another blast as his car passed by the bottom of our driveway, even a longer one than the previous. "Ringworm!" my dad yelled. Then he stumbled forward like he'd been shoved from behind by some drunk, invisible friend and hurled his bottle in the direction of the car. It sailed from beneath the veranda with beer spiralling from the open top like petrol from a Molotov cocktail and exploded right on the road just beside the car. "Graham, what the hell are you doing, Graham?" my mum said. The car's brake lights went on. My dad didn't answer back. His nostrils were drawn together as if he was sucking in some great amount of oxygen. His blue eyes looked pale and hard. "Quick," my mum said, "inside now before you really start something." My dad wasn't having any of that. He stood his ground. The vein in the side of his neck was bulging like a garden hose with a kink in it. The car's reverse lights came on. "Michael, over here now," my mum said, "quick smart." I was standing next to my dad. He had his hands on his hips and I put my hands on my hips too. We were both wearing our jerseys, black and orange, the colours of a ferocious animal. Neither me or my dad moved. "Michael," my mum said again, "over here, right this minute." Out on the street, out front, the yellow car stayed where it was. Now, a white car heading in the same direction slowed as it came up alongside our front gate, and the woman in the passenger seat craned her neck to look at the decorations on our veranda. She waved and pointed through the windscreen at the little black and orange flag attached to the aerial of her car. We had one of those on our car too. Then she drove away. Now, speaking very softly, my mum said, "Graham, think about what you're doing." She placed a free hand in the middle of my dad's back then, like she was trying to calm some sort of horse or something. Then she said his name again, "Graham." You haven't eaten anything yet. Come on. Come inside. Have your bacon and eggs before they get cold. I'll put the kettle on, Graham. The old man didn't budge. It was grand final day. You don't mess around with cups of coffee on grand final day. Even I knew this. Not when you've waited a whole year for this day to come about, the opportunity to make right for the previous year's loss. Now, I felt her fingernails dig into my elbow and just above. Fine, she said. That's fine, that is. And she began marching me towards the front door. Stay out there, then, she called back through the door. See if I care. Now, she began making her way down the hallway towards the kitchen. I could still feel the nails digging into my skin even after she'd let go. She pointed her index finger at me. And as for you and that ridiculous haircut, well, I didn't wait to hear what she had to say next. I pushed open the door to get back out there with my dad. Michael, back here now. Right, Michael. Now, I waited for my dad to turn around and say something to override her command, like he'd done with the haircut, laughing about it with Murray the barber, while Mum sat furiously in the seat by the door. But his attention was on that falcon now, not me. And so I had no option but to do as she told me. Now, stepping back into the hallway until I could no longer see my dad on the veranda, but I made sure I could still see the falcon. It hadn't gone anywhere. It was sitting in the middle of the road with its reverse lights on and its tail end blocking our neighbour's driveway. Idiot wants to ruin grand final day for himself. Well, that's up to him, but he can do it by himself. Do you hear me? She raised her voice and I said, you can do it your bloody self. That's when Dad came into view again. He jumped down off the veranda and was making his way across the front yard, paying no attention to my mum whatsoever. His arms swung stiffly by his side. When he reached the front gate, he lifted the latch and went to step through. Now, my mum let out an incomprehensible scream. She bundles herself out of that veranda, slamming the door behind her with enough force that it skipped its latch and bounced back open again. Now, I caught it on the bounce, holding it slightly ajar. She was 8 months pregnant, carrying a lot of weight. Now, I stood with my nose pressed against the fly screen. It's not like bacon fat. Now, using one of the decorated veranda posts for support, she lowered herself off the veranda down onto the pathway. Dad, look out, I thought to yell, but when I opened my mouth, nothing came out. As it turned out, she wasn't going for my dad anyway. She barged straight past him, kicked the gate the rest of the way open and ramped out onto the footpath. It was my dad who went after her then, but she moved quickly too, like pregnancy was nothing. When he caught up, he tried putting himself between her and the falcon, and she hit him with the flat of her palm. That hair that had been tucked behind her ears a few moments earlier now hung all over her face. It hung over her eyes. She hit my dad in the cheek. She was like a front row forward, palming defenders off as she went. Now, my dad moved sideways to block her again. She stumbled down off the lip of the gutter. I thought she was going to fall right over, but she managed to stay on her feet. One of her slippers came off. Now, my dad bent down to pick it up and handed it back to her. She hit him in the face with it. He put his hands up to protect himself. All the while, he kept looking back over his shoulder to see what was going on with the yellow falcon. Nothing was going on with the yellow falcon. It stayed right where it was, and I stayed right where I was. When I finally became clear to my mum that she was going to get past my dad, she hurled the slipper in the direction of the car and it landed on the car's boot. Get away from here, she yelled. Get away from our house. Leave us alone. The car's reverse lights went out. Go, I said. Go on, get out, go on. Now, the brake lights disappeared. Then the car began moving off. It moved slowly at first. After two or three houses, though, the driver dropped his foot and squealed the tyres. My mum's slipper lay flat in the middle of the road like somebody's flattened cat. Rather than going to pick it up, she circled back around. She was breathing heavily and on the verge of tears. My dad reached out to put a hand on her belly to make sure if she was okay, and she slapped it away. Now, her foot was bleeding from the broken glass all over the road. She didn't even bend over to pick the pieces out. Instead, she marched, limped, back along the footpath, through the gate and towards the house. When she got to the veranda, she reached out and took hold of one of the posts and used to pull herself up onto the cement. I pushed the screen door open and held it open for her. Just as she was passing me, a ute with an orange and black flag attached to its aerial came up alongside my dad. Now, he was still standing in the middle of the road when my mum had left him. The passenger, a young man with a can of beer in his hand and no shirt, leaned his bare torso out of the open window so he could high-five my dad on the way past. Up the Tigers, he cheered, foamy beer spilling from the top of his can as their palms slapped together. My dad stayed where he was until the ute made its way to the bottom of the street and turned off. Slowly he lowered his arm again and looked back towards the house. I stood inside the doorway looking out at him with my hand on the back of my neck. There were bloodied heel prints all over the cement. An orange streamer. which had came loose as my mum pulled herself back off the dirt path, lay coiled in a heap at the bottom of its post. A sign, I suppose, of the disappointment that was still to come. And that was that.